Welcome back, everyone, to Red Spotlight Entertainment. I'm Alexis, joined today by David Francisco for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Reaction Commentary Series, made for the longtime fan of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. that wants to come back on here and talk endlessly about one of our favorite shows of all time. Last week, we had kind of a barn burner of an episode in terms of emotional damage, I guess, just with Bobby and Hunter exiting the show in really an abrupt fashion. But no, I feel like parting shot for all the things people want to say about it. I think we all came to the conclusion that every time, for the most part, that the people on this show are throwing a curveball and there are outside forces coming in here and making them do things they otherwise perhaps wouldn't want to do, they still rise to the occasion and they come up with an amazing episode. And I think David and I walked away from last week feeling like, yeah, this is a great show. This is a great episode. This probably wasn't what they wanted to do, and yet they still ended up doing it kind of like beautifully. Now, at the time of that recording, we didn't have comments for the previous episode. We're kind of a little bit, I think we fell behind. I don't know what happened, but we don't have any comments from that episode just yet because I don't believe it's live yet. So on the page, so that's why we're not going to be taking in comments from last week's episode. Today, we're going to be talking about episode number, and this is where I lose
14.
track. I think it's episode 14 of season 3. This is called Watch Dogs. This is written by Drew Z. Greenberg, one of our recurring favorites, directed by Jesse Brochko, and of course, features our returning cast, Clark Gregg, Ming-Na Wen, Chloe Bennett, Ian DeCastaker, Elizabeth Henstridge, Henry Simmons, and Luke Mitchell. Oh, I didn't read Adrian Palicki and Nick Blood's names. That's ouch. And it features guest appearances by Titus Welliver as Felix Blake, Mark DeCascos as Guerra, and Gaius Charles as Reuben McKenzie. This was originally aired on ABC on March 29th, 2016, to 3.20 million viewers. It's a lot. I don't know. We'll see. I don't got anything else. We don't have any comments to go over. Do we want to just go ahead and jump into the episode?
Well, there was one for episode 12.
Do we have comments?
Yeah, just one. Okay. It was just from Silva just saying, always fun to hang out with you two, which thank you.
Oh, thank you. And we appreciate that. And I know sometimes we're not the most consistent of people, though we try to be, of course. There are things that definitely come our way, and we sometimes can do something, and sometimes we can't do something about it, and that's just kind of the way that it is. But we are all so appreciative of the people who have just decided to attach themselves to our journey here of reliving this show. I think we've honestly have gained a lot out of it, and it's nice to be able to share something that we have such a deep passion for. So yeah. Well, should we go ahead and begin with today's episode? Let's go ahead and start the
podcast
episode in 3, 2, 1 and go. Previously on Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And just so you know, this is about the end of a work week for me, and so sometimes my mouth is just going to say words that my mind doesn't mean to say, because I am, and I'm not sure if you can tell this through the screen, I'm pretty fucking tired. I mean, right now, I'm happy to be here. I'm happy to do this episode. It's funny. It doesn't even feel like it's been a week since we recorded that one. I don't know what the hell has happened, but here we are. I'm just like, this recap is just showing me, by the way, I don't know what was it about last week's episode specifically, but I really did like how it was shot. Like, I don't know. I know that there have been some like critiques of like how the show looks. I don't know. So this is an interesting episode, if memory serves correct, because and I think it's also pretty wise to have done an episode like this immediately after what happened with last week's episode, because I think more than anyone else on the team, it would hit Mac the hardest that Bobby and Hunter left. Mm-hmm. And I'm happy that the show realized that and went with it. And Mac is here taking some time off because he would need some time off from like recovering from that emotional heavy hitter.
It's also so far like we've gotten the least amount of info about him still. Because for sure, we just gotten a lot. For sure, second season, we got a lot of info with Hunter and Bobby. And mostly just about their relationships and all that. But for sure, for Hunter, because of the way he works and everything. With Mac, I mean, it's mostly just been him with the team. Though, like, it's just, we got...
Yeah.
The info that we get is just, like, how he feels about the team itself, the whole S.H.I.E.L.D. organization and all that. But not much on background, I think.
Which, to an extent, is understandable, because there are, like, 20 main characters in season two.
Yeah.
There's a lot of moving parts. And the thing is this, it's like, we don't really start delving into Mac as a character, like where we can begin to know more about him until like two episodes ago when Yo-Yo is introduced. Cause then that's the first time like he actually speaks openly about his faith, which is a big thing about him that we haven't found out about him yet, right? So it's like this right here is the benefit of not having that many people on your ensemble. Bobby and Hunter were incredible to have on the team, but I do feel like with them being gone, it is going to allow other characters to benefit from that. They're going to have to make more use of the cast that they have, and I do feel you that Mac didn't really start getting more attention up until like the end of season two. They were kind of like, they had more priorities, obviously, with season two. And now with Bobby and Hunter not being around, this is definitely one of those things where it's like, well, now Mac can kind of like become a fully realized character with the vacuum that's kind of been opened up. And we're going to see, I think also they're going to, we've hardly had any screen time, it feels like, with like Lincoln. Like for a while now. And I feel like now, since we're down two team members, now is the part of the season where we're going to get some more with Lincoln. So it's like, it's interesting. Like, I don't think this was what was intended to like lose Bobby and Hunter, but how they were able to handle last week's episode, it made me feel like, okay, we've put a close. We put a bow on Bobby and Hunter's character. And now we can make room for other characters that haven't had a turn yet to really like come into their own. And I really do feel like Mac as a character begins to really shine with this season. Because they're giving him more, honestly, to do. I'm speaking of yeah, right there. the look on everybody's faces was like, well, that's not good.
Yep.
Yeah, that's what it is. I also want to mention, though, they were talking about how, like, what has happened in the last couple of episodes in the world of S.H.I.E.L.D. about how did the Watchdogs go from being an online group to now being mobilized? This episode is going to say that one character, one former S.H.I.E.L.D. agent, is like, it's going to pass it off as if, like, they're the ones who were in control. But I think behind the scenes, we're meant to believe that, if you remember season four, if you remember the characters, Anton Ivanov and Ellen and Deer, if you're a diehard, if you're like, you know every character's name on this show, then you know who I'm talking about in season four. I am under the impression that at this point they're up and running with their whole situation, if you know what I mean. Which is going to come more, this exchange, by the way, where Daisy's just like, they're not even letting Daisy like catch up. They're just like having their own conversation, which is great. Mm-hmm. Great a back and forth right there. But yeah.
Also, he brought up the nitramine with the whole implosion thing, which by this time has Agent Carter started for sure, or like the season two. I can't remember where, because I know for sure.
Yes.
Yeah, yes. That specific technology was.
By this time, Agent Carter season two already ended.
Mm.
Agent Carter season two would have aired in between Maveth and the episode that Yo-Yo was introduced.
Okay, okay.
Now, while in the world of S.H.I.E.L.D., you know, Ellen Adir and Anton Ivanov, the Russian, are already up and running, I don't know if Jed Whedon and Marissa had even those characters conceived in their minds just yet, because this episode really goes out of its way to think, make you think that it's Felix Blake that is the leader of the Watchdogs, and they maybe were thinking that we're going to use Blake more in season four. And then I'm going to assume they couldn't get the actor back, and so they had to like work around that. That's what I assume most likely happened, because clearly the Watchdogs were going to be a part of four in some big way. What I like about this show is that, unlike a lot of other shows, I'm not saying it's perfect at doing this, but like it rarely lets their characters off the hook for like decisions they make.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they're using this as a great moment for Simmons to kind of like grow and learn from that. And notice how we're finally getting to that scene now. Now that we're working with a few fewer characters.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, this episode is, I really like this episode.
Yeah.
Oh, look how. And I also will say it's like, subtlety I think has had its day. Especially in the time that we live in. And what I appreciate about S.H.I.E.L.D. is that it's never been coy or shy about just saying the important quiet part out loud. About like the fact that hatred that is spewed on the internet can lead to dangerous actions and even violence. And how a lot of normal people can become radicalized. you know. So Daisy and Mac had a really interesting disagreement there. What's funny is I kind of agree with both of them.
Yeah.
Like I that's the thing about this. It's like
for right now.
Yes.
For right now, I agree with both of them. But
yeah, for right now.
Daisy does kind
of. Well, later in the episode things get a little out of hand. Mm-hmm. I'll grant you that. But like if I had Daisy's powers, which again, people shouldn't. Because then that leads you thinking that you can do whatever you want. But it's like, there are plenty of individuals out there that, in the world of S.H.I.E.L.D., let's just say you would get a lot quicker answers if you do it that way, for sure. But, you know, Max, like, yeah, but it's about how we respond. Which, you can't always respond in the best of ways. But, the point, I get the point. But the point that Mac was making, it's like, look, my brother likes the Watchdogs, so all the people who follow the Watchdogs can't be bad people. No. The point is, there are too many good people that allow themselves to be manipulated and that are susceptible to manipulation by a bunch of bad faith actors and grifters online of all kinds. That has happened to too many people that we... I mean, this was... 2016? This is March, I think, 2016. So it's like almost 10 years ago. And that was way before where we are right now, where it's just like, yeah, that's just common knowledge. There are plenty of people who are being captured by just really, really bad narratives out there. And it's what I like about this episode is that, look, his brother is underwater economically. He can't handle being in charge of the house. And he feels like he's been left behind. He feels he's been belittled. But when you feel that way, then you start thinking, oh, these Watchdogs, they maybe have the right idea. Finally, someone is sticking up for the little guy.
Just looks at it for a second and is like, oh, wait, hold on. Let's just redo all this. I know your husband better. It's okay.
Yeah.
No, but I mean, it makes sense. They have they took the time to show how their relationship works and all that. So it makes perfect sense that she would know how he would be thinking right now, especially when he did transform. You know, maybe she can think if May probably like interrogated her the way Coulson did everyone else when they were trying to look for Ward.
Right.
She would start noticing some things probably.
Preach. Thank you, Coulson, for doing that. Lincoln's a bit too arrogant.
Yeah.
And then can I just say, having lived a few more years of life now and what I do, let's just say I feel Coulson's pain having to be, let's just say, to have subordinates of yours. Give you attitude like that and wanting to like debate the merit of every point that you have, and me knowing better because I'm way older, like, no, you're doing this wrong. And then they cut you off before you're done talking. And it's like, and if you know me in general, I don't like being cut off when I'm speaking about anything, much less when I'm trying to help your ass. So I'm not going to say more because it's going to give it away. But if you know, you know what I'm talking about. I have a couple of ones right now that are just like, just stop with the attitude. You don't. By the way, I love Daisy. I love it. I mean, I don't condone it, but I love it. What she does, it's incredible. Because it's like, it's so empowering because like people like the Watchdogs, like they take such delight in like wanting to oppress people and spreading all this hate, and to have the other come face to face and like, what are you going to do about me now, bitch? It's such a good scene. See, what a coward. Don't hurt me. Don't hurt me. Can we cast Clay Bennett in a horror movie?
Mm-hmm.
I can totally see it. But I mean, like, yeah, we'll see. For the record, I think Clay Bennett is a really great talent, and I feel like she needs to be getting more work. That's yeah. just me, but, you know.
Yeah, I mean, she tried. The Powerpuff Girls show. Just completely.
Oh, that wasn't her fault. That was no. That was
that's yeah. such bad luck. Honestly, felt bad.
Hey, at least it didn't make it to air.
Yeah, but I mean,
I feel like maybe it would have been more embarrassing if it actually had been released. You know.
Yeah, the trailer alone was rough.
There was a trailer.
Yeah, it got leaked.
I didn't see it.
Oh my gosh! Like I could see the style that they were trying to go for, but
Powerpuff.
I mean, I don't like it.
It's such a stupid idea, though. I'm like,
no, I.
That's that.
I like the idea of the Powerpuff Girls all grown up, and maybe some part of them wanted to live a normal life, or maybe
is that what the idea was?
Yeah.
Okay. You see, I don't even know. It just seemed like they were just doing a generic live action remake, and that they were going to be playing like still children.
No. They were gonna be adults, and like something happened in the mission, in a mission that made them stop being superheroes and start living normal lives. The thing though is like they were trying to go about it in
this
a
is after
way.
They were replaced by Billy, Mandy, and Grimm.
Billy and Mandy.
If you get this reference.
yeah. Nice.
Because they took over their roles, obviously.
Yeah. But they were trying to go about it in a jokey way, kind of like almost like a little parody, I guess, of sorts. I don't know. But that style just didn't work. I think they could have taken it seriously of, like, you know, these super powerful beings that can't balance out normal life or something. I don't know. It's basically Superman and
Lois. I just keep picturing Grimm.
Yeah.
Saying, we're on it, Professor, with his voice, and then just like flying away. I'm in a different world right now. One thing that I just realized, have you noticed that Fitz in this episode is really kind of a passive observer? Like, he was there when, like, Mac and Daisy were having their, like, their debate. And then he's obviously was there assisting, I think, hesitantly assisting Daisy in what she was doing. But it's really curious to me that, and it makes me wonder if perhaps this may be, like, the true origin for, like, the doctor, the Fitz doctor.
Mm.
Or at least Fitz's dark side. Because a lot of the tactics that Daisy was using here, Fitz would more and then some use in the future seasons. So it's like, not like, you know, I don't want to infantilize Fitz. Like, he's like this little boy that's like getting exposed to like different kinds of ideas. But, you know, it's really interesting how the choice is made where he's not really voicing outwardly, I think, a perspective. He's just here to observe, and he's going to be, I think, wrestling with the ideas that he got from both Mac and Daisy, I think, throughout the rest of the show. This is just something that I thought of just now, mm-hmm. just to be clear about that. I'm like, it's curious.
No, yeah. No, I definitely noticed that too, that he's just been pretty quiet this whole episode. Can't really remember if, you know, anything that happens here gets brought up later on for him or what. But that's also an interesting theory, that this is the beginning of, what is it, Doctor? Or
The Dark Fitz, or Doctor, yeah. the Doctor, basically. It's just like, or his dark side. Or like him, like, this is part, I mean, season 3 Fitz grows a lot. Mm-hmm. He's already been through a lot this season because of what's happened. So it's like, I mean, later on in the series, like, Fitz is going to do some pretty bad things. And let's just say for good reasons, or quote unquote good reasons. So I just like the idea of like every character here exposed to each other, you know, causes them to grow in different ways, or maybe in the same way alongside each other.
That sucks. I totally forgot about that. He got hurt before the Hydra reveal. That sucks.
Like, right when it was happening. That's, yeah. See, Fitz is picking it up already. You see how he got that watchdog and, like, had him next to him?
Yeah.
Like how Fitz just low-key called him an idiot. It's like, that's a word you wouldn't know. I love that. Fitz's brain, man. Mm. What did he even say right now?
I don't know.
Follow that? But like,
I could follow it, but like, I can't repeat it for you. You know?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Also, in a similar way, like Lincoln is kind of fits in this scene, like just the silent observer here.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there's more of a reason for him though in this than yeah. Fitz.
Coulson's like, yeah, you couldn't figure that out?
And he probably should have, too, when...
Yeah. He wasn't moving.
Yeah, when he wasn't moving, when he was, like, making fun of him because he wasn't taking orders, it's like, he could have taken action at that moment, but he didn't. I wonder what they used there.
Yeah.
How they made it.
It looked real. Mm-hmm. Oh, I forgot about this completely. Mm. I was like, oh, yeah, he did, like, stumble into the whole mission. Yeah, this is bad. What I also like about the dynamic here, it's like, remember when we first met Mac, he was very, very anti-alien, and now things have just, like, it's a complete switcheroo. Mm-hmm. When, defending them at every turn. You asked earlier about what is it about a shotgun in the season. David, I think you have your answer here. I guess Mac's dad had a shotgun.
Yeah.
Throughout most of, I think, Mac's childhood, it looks like. So maybe he grew up admiring his dad and just dad, I guess, was a hunter. I don't know what, but I mean, dad's shotgun. Okay. So I guess maybe that's the genesis of like Mac's fascination with shotguns, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, that works.
By the way, I love how they're just shooting them dead. Like, there's no need to pretend here with, like, icers. Which, to be fair, it's not as if they have the option to ice them, but it's like, in this situation, it very much is like a kill or be killed, you know? Because we know the watchdogs aren't holding back. Notice how that dog didn't break? The little thing.
Yeah.
It still like was in one piece. How hard must it be? There we go. God damn, that is violent.
I don't know if it would have hauled, but who cares?
What, the name of the tape?
Yeah.
Man, this episode really did a lot for Mac. I'm just like, wow. Mini Mac.
Yeah. Oh my God.
This episode flew by, man.
Right?
This is really, really fast.
I'm like, geez. All right, let's go ahead and get into some reviews. Here's Eric Goldman, IGN. Mac has always been portrayed as being unsure about a lot of things happening within the team. So tracking how the sudden absence of his two closest friends in the group, Bobby and Hunter, would impact him was a smart touch. It was also nice to meet his brother, Ruben, given how infrequent it is that the personal lives of the S.H.I.E.L.D. team interweave into the show. Plus, Mac made a shotgun axe. How cool is that? After a name drop by Daisy, the Watchdogs were front and center here, a militant group who were striking back in the wake of superhuman-related tragedies. There was a lot going on in this episode that seemed to both reflect upon and build into the perception of superheroes and the Avengers leading into Civil War, as we got specific mentions of events the Watchdogs were upset over, including Blake referencing the creation of Ultron. Let's see here. It's clear that S.H.I.E.L.D. is setting up their own version of Civil War now within the team. With one underlying question, should Inhumans be cured? Intermixed with the concerns even within the team about how those with superpowers conduct themselves. It wasn't done very subtly, but it was still pretty effective, as Mac couldn't condone Daisy wanting to use her powers to threaten or coerce answers out of a possible Watchdog. I also have to commend the way the Howard Stark tech the Watchdogs caused. The way the Howard Stark tech the Watchdogs causing implosions made them a very credible threat. The opening, where 1 second it seemed like that they covered in an ATCU building in paintball splats, and the next it was collapsing in and of itself, made quite an impression. Let me throw yet another shout out for Elizabeth Henstridge's acting, as she was so terrific bringing up her guilt over letting Andrew out and causing the deaths in the aftermath of all those Inhumans. A scene it was very good to get, given how it felt like the entire fact was a bit forgotten in the mid-season finale and when the show returned. May also had a great moment here, too, telling Simmons, Don't Give Me Hope as the Cure possibility brought up. I continue to find Lincoln a bland presence, but I did like Coulson testing him here, especially when he noted Lincoln had joined the team without any vetting process previously. Him testing Lincoln by ordering him to kill Blake, knowing it was a hologram, was an interesting scenario as well. Oh, and while it's not quite clear where Daredevil Season 2 is, timeline-wise, compared to S.H.I.E.L.D.'s events right now, it was still fun to get that Hell's Kitchen gang war mention on the news. So in the beginning of the episode, when Mac and Mini-Mac are watching TV about how the Watchdogs had attacked that ATCU facility, there's a Chiron at the bottom of the screen that is talking about the gang war that's happening in Hell's Kitchen, which is, I think, what happens in Daredevil Season 2. Mm-hmm. So cool little nod there for those who may not be aware of. All right, let me go ahead and go over to Alex McLevy at AV Club. Let's see here. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. makes progress fixing its two weakest links. Let's see here. The AV Club might be having a slight sense of pride at tonight's episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., however misplaced it may be. See, we've made our feelings rather clear regarding two particular agents on Phil Coulson's team. It was all the way back at the end of last season when I said, rather publicly, that Alfonso Mack McKenzie should be fired. As an agent, he was utterly derelict in his duty of keeping watch over the monolith that swallowed up poor Gemma. That's funny. Wait a minute. That wasn't really his fault. I mean, like, that's...
that's literally fits.
And nobody ever called him out for, oh my god. This season, he's been most useful at getting knocked out during... fights and being inexplicably promoted to acting head of S.H.I.E.L.D. during Coulson's brief absence, despite having literally the worst track record event. Let me just say this. Let me just go back there. It makes perfect sense why Coulson made Mac the acting head, because it feels like he was the only person on the team left that had... like a full head. Like who else was he going to go to? He explained, like, I can't have May right now with what happened with Andrew. Like, that's awful. Bobby and Hunter. Well, first of all, Hunter is not an option ever. I mean, the guy just basically almost got Andrew killed. Bobby is. I mean, I think Bobby would make a great leader, but also I think Coulson probably had Bobby and Hunter in mind for his little side mission. And who does that leave? Simmons? After getting thrust back from a planet? No, I'm sorry. Fitz and Simmons weren't even an option because they were kidnapped.
Oh, yeah.
And then... Who else? Mm-hmm. Like, I think really, like, Mac was the only viable option in that situation. So it's like, I mean, it never struck me as odd. But, okay. Anyway. Save one, of course. Lincoln Campbell has been a grumpy, out-of-control wet blanket for the majority of his time on the show. Okay, now that's a different story. Or at least since they left the Inhuman Refuge in the mountains. I singled out his lack of appealing characteristics just a couple weeks ago when noting that a forced, charisma-free relationship with Daisy does not make for a compelling hero. Between him and Mac, the team seemed to have a significant drag in that neither one offered much reason to root for them. Henry Simmons' portrayal of Mac was charismatic and fully realized, but the role gave him nothing of value, so he often felt like an empty vessel. Luke Mitchell may be handsome and talented, but whether it's his performance or the material, Lincoln is a drip, no fun to watch, and even less enjoyable when shoehorned into an Inhuman Fomance. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. hurt us. Watchdogs devotes its A story almost wholly to Mac, while the B plot sees Lincoln being put to the test. It's an old tactic to wheel out the family member when we need to care about somebody we don't. But in this case, Mac's brother Reuben was just what the tallest member of the team needed to demonstrate his value and appeal. The relationship between the two slightly estranged brothers felt lived in and natural. The years of affection between siblings worn down by uncertainty and distance. When Ruben exploded at Mac for lying to him, you could sense the long, simmering resentment boiling to the surface. And during the struggle to escape from the house, the nods and unspoken moments between them demonstrated the familiar shorthand of people who know each other better than anyone else. When Daisy tells Ruben that if she needs someone to watch her back, Mac's the one she calls, this was the first time in a long time the sentiment didn't make my eyes roll. There is a humanism inherent to Mac's value, but it's a quality that was never articulated properly until this week. But articulations of humanism took many forms in Watch Dogs, some of them none too friendly. While Ruben's speech to Mac about his attraction to the Watch Dogs felt a little abrupt, Felix Blake's certainty didn't. "I signed up to protect the world," Blake says, and his sense of outrage is understandable, especially once that final scene revealed he hadn't fully healed after all and was stuck in a wheelchair. Here's someone who thought he was defending the world against alien threats, and when he wakes up, he finds out his government is giving them badges instead. To Blake, it doesn't matter that his information may be coming from Hydra. SHIELD was already rotted from the inside, and its collaboration with Inhumans is nothing but evidence the agency has lost sight of its mission. He wants the alien invasion neutralized, not bartered with. And hearing him tick off the reasons proffers at least a reasonable case, if not a correct one. The Chitauri, Deathlok, Ultron. In his mind, these are failures on the part of those who thought we could work with super-powered individuals, and the fallout is proof that Blake's mission is crucial, which is why he needs some attack dogs. The Watch Dogs storyline is the most topical and relevant to our real-world situation Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has ever gotten. Frustrated and dispossessed people with no economic prospects for improving their lot in life. The men who populate the watchdogs are a lot like the internet trolls who take their feelings of insecurity and anger to the next level, be it via doxing or physical violence. They're vicious bullies who fancy themselves freedom fighters. You can hear shades of Cliven Bundy's anti-government militia fanaticism in the watchdog rhetoric, as well as the worrying echoes of those who shout for violence at Trump rallies. It's the sound of people who feel powerless and want a target for their anger. But rather than the difficult and lengthy work of political activism and policy development, they want a shortcut, and if it happens to cause some pain to those they see different, well, so much be better. I do want to say here, I'm going to take a break here. This line, the lengthy work of political activism and policy development. Get over yourself. I'm so sorry, but I am not here. This is obviously 2016 mentality. Nobody out here right now in 2025 is like fighting for the sake of the rules and the process or decorum or decency. Unless you're Chuck Schumer or Hakeem, Apak Shakur Jeffries, who are just weakling freaking Democrats that do nothing about anything and can inspire nobody. This is an argument for like progress and change should take decades. I don't agree with that whatsoever. There is power. Where there's a will, there's a way. If we had people in power right now who were willing to change the material conditions of people's lives, we could have it done like this. And so this mentality is just liberalism. That is a failed way of thinking. And I wanted to just take a break from that and to disavow that way of thinking, because that clearly has not panned out in any way whatsoever. And the end stage of this kind of thinking is the rise of fascism that we have right now. Anyway, that is my soapbox. Let's get back to this review. You can almost hear the argument in Age of Ultron between Steve Rogers and Tony Stark playing out in the air between Ruben and Mac. Every time someone tries to win a war before it starts, innocent people die, Captain America warns, every time. See, it's a shame those movies didn't really do anything more besides that one sentence about that. Okay. Anyway, it's heartening to see the series laying this much groundwork in anticipation of mirroring the events of Civil War. We've all talked about how the films affect the shows, but not vice versa. This narrative means S.H.I.E.L.D. is taking full advantage of its medium in order to tell the story of the upcoming Captain America that the film can't. A full and fraught exploration of the need to protect freedom and privacy, even for those with extraordinary abilities. Tonight's discussions between Mac and his brother Blake and Coulson, even Mac and Daisy, are smart inroads into this thorny, ongoing knot of a problem, one that even pits members of the team against each other. If we're going to do justice to the depth of the conflict and dilemma raised by the basic question, what rights are inhumans deserved? It's going to pull in real-world allegories and issues of minority rights, prisoner rights, even questions of terrorism and the government's role or lack thereof in transgressing the law in its pursuit of security. This is the feel of a show finally getting serious about injecting some compelling layers to its frothy, super-powered fun. I have no idea if it can stick the landing, but damn, it's good to see the ambition. Stray observations. Let's see. In the wake of Hunter's departure, it looks like Fitz's dry wit may be a boost in presence. What does he think you do? Insurance? Well, not anymore, I'd wager. Okay. Poor Gemma is so guilt-ridden primarily because of Lash's murder. She's spending time at the gun range, a sensible move, but not as sensible as taking May's advice and using that guilt. So yeah, that was the review for the AV Club. And do we have any thoughts on that, David? Anything that stuck out to you before we head over to Ami's reaction at the end here?
No, not really.
Okay.
I'm assuming he doesn't know who he's exchanging with? Or what they're trying to do? All right, man. What a fantastic episode. That blew by. I didn't realize we had kind of run out of our runtime there by the end of it, because I was just so locked into this storyline, you know? Especially coming off the heels of Bobby and Hunter's goodbye, seeing what was kind of Mac's episode, really, to kind of, you know, come to terms with that. He stepped away for a little bit, even though work didn't let him kind of really rest at all. That was the intent. Seeing him try to wrestle with and deal with the fact that, like, these two people very intimately close to him that he's worked with for a long time, like, he's just not going to see them anymore. Trying to explain that to his brother was also kind of interesting because he was like, he can only really call it them work friends when it was really so much more than that. Eventually, I'm sure he understands by the end of it now that he realized what Max does, but in the moment, it just feels like such a downplay of what they were. He was like, hey, well, family's always going to be here, man. I think, like, more than anything, they would qualify as family with everything that they've been through. Rightfully so. He was in a, you know, a sentimental and sensitive spot right now. He's dealing with pain, and he's trying to wrestle through that by bonding with his brother. But that gets a little infected by all this shit going on in the world, and him being called into work because of these things that have happened. He didn't get that time away to kind of distance himself from all of that. You know, he got roped back into it. His brother is going on hard times, and that just kind of further exacerbated some of the tension that was there between them, because obviously he's, you know, not knowing what Mac does puts a lot of strain on him because he doesn't know why he's not here all the time or helping out as much as he is because, you know, he's been here for his parents, he's taking care of their house, and he's taking all these responsibilities onto himself, and Mac just kind of comes in, does what he needs to go, and then disappears. That's his perception, at least. One, he wants to spend time with his brother and feels inadequate or shoved aside when Mac just drops him to go do work stuff, you know, working for an insurance agency or whatever as he's selling it. This is like, how important can that be? You know, I got to go assess a damaged vehicle or whatever the fuck he has to do. Like, it just seems like your problems just don't matter to him at all. if he's just running away from work, which is why I think when the revelation comes at the end with what he does, especially given the situation they found themselves in, he had such a newfound respect for him, even pride in his brother. You can see it in a way he just looks at them and talked about him in the end. The realization when he's asking questions about what his brother does now, he's like, he's really good at this, isn't he? He helps people, right? Like, and that's such an endearing aspect of that. But it just goes to show how, like, when somebody is down and out like this, when he's dealing with all these struggles that he is, when he sees these things on the news, he sees these things being talked about online, you know, that, you know, kind of validate how he's feeling, it gets really tempting to kind of fall into these trappings. And he very well could have ended up as just another one of those watchdogs who's had his fears, his insecurities, his position in life right now used to kind of fan this flame and have just more of his soul get corrupted and put into this machine of hate. That is, even like these people are just a cog in somebody else's game. Like, their hate is being weaponized for a cause that's not even their own. I think this episode is a great way to show how hatred can be blinding at times, because you could see that with, you know, him. Like, he was like, I mean, you wouldn't even call that hatred. You could call him fear. It's a little bit of both. There's a little mix of, like, how hate and fear kind of work hand in hand to blind people. You know, he was tempted. He talked. He kind of was like, hey, man, what they're saying, I kind of resonate with it. And then he saw the truth of the matter when, just because his brother is helping another person, you know, they don't see them as a person. They dehumanize and immoralize it, like, you know, just like with the mutants in the Marvel Universe, the Inhumans, just like them, are just an allegory for the other people that are not the norm, not the majority, whatever. You know, Max sees them for who they are. They're, at the end of the day, they're just people. People with different abilities than we have, but at the end of the day, they're just like us on an emotional level and all that. So, like, for helping them, they were trying to kill him. I mean, I think they actually thought he was one as well, you know, because there was that line in there was like, well, hey, we thought your friend was a guy. We didn't expect this little girl to be this heavy hitter with these shockwaves and stuff or whatever the fucker said. I was in there with Fitz, you know, and it just goes to show at the end of the day, they didn't give a shit. They didn't give a shit who he was. His brother was like, what the fuck? And he was like, hey, man, you're by association, welcome to the club. They're going to kill your ass, too. This is the group you were about to fall in line with. And at the end of the day, too, they're being manipulated to further the aims of this other organization altogether for a wholly different game. Like, they're just completely blind to their puppeteering. Like, they think they're in power. They think they're in control, but they're just part of somebody else's game. They're just pawns and slaves to their own hatred. Oh my God. And this episode is like, God, it's fucking depressing to think about. But like, given when this episode came out and how relevant this still is to this day, it's just, like I said, it's depressing because I think this is more relevant now than it was maybe when this came out. And we have seen events where, maybe not to this scale, but where these hate groups or these people that carry this kind of vitriol have brought that into the real world and harmed and killed people because of it. The scary thing, too, is like, how do you respond to that? Especially if you are one of the people that are being targeted, being threatened directly. Like with Daisy in this episode, her people were being targeted, were being vilified, dehumanized, targeted, you know, and she's pissed off. It's just like, what's the right way to respond? Like, Mac was like, we need intel, we need to wait. You know, he told her to stand back. And she went against orders. She acted emotionally. She acted on her fear, on her anger as well, of her hatred. And she went out and she did what she did, kind of abusing their tools to track these people down with good intentions in mind, right? You know, violating their privacy and all this stuff to prevent tragedy and outbreaks. So like, it's the moral line of like, God, it's like the Minority Report problem. It's like, how far do we go to make sure that these things do not happen? Like, how much are we willing to give up of our privacy, of our lives, in order to save lives? You know, where's the line? And she kind of skirts that a little bit. Obviously, she's been a hacker. She uses her skills, the resources here to start digging into the online activity of some of these anonymous users and tracks them down individually and even confronts them. And that one dude in the pickup truck, and she, you know, threatens him, and then at gunpoint with Fitz, destroying his property and all this stuff. You know, honestly, had that gone a different way, she could even be validating their fears. And that could be turned against them and her own cause. Because this is a whole world problem in this universe. Like, with this situation with the Inhumans. The world doesn't know what to do with these people. And something like that, if that got seen, witnessed, whatever, by anybody else, that could be turned against them all. That could drastically hurt what she and S.H.I.E.L.D. are fighting for. And then you have the flip side of that. You see her doing all of this, and then someone who very much so up until this point was very much so acting like that the entire time, because that's kind of the entire way they've been programmed to live, thanks to Afterlife, and that was Lincoln. He's been learning to try to be a better soldier, be a better agent, to kind of see if he can follow orders. While she's kind of fallen into these little trappings, he actually proves himself worthy by the end of this episode. Even, you know, it's a struggle. He's working through it. But at the end of the day, he followed orders. He listened to Coulson. They had a good little journey, a little outing out there as they were kind of doing their own little intel sweep. But then we have Daisy just kind of jumping the gun, rushing in, not properly scouting anything. She's getting itchy. And she got Fitz kind of dropped into this situation, which then unturned because of all of this. Got Mac and his brother thrown into it all. It just goes to show how our fear can also infect us. What is the right way to respond in this situation? Hell, I've fallen in that trap. Now, if I feel like I've been pushed, if I'm backed into a corner like Daisy, you know, the instinctual thing is to defend yourself, to lash out, you know, to want to hurt back sometimes. It's like, oh, it feels good to get that, just that little tinge of revenge. But then what's the flip side of that, you know? Like, what if you do take the high road and you don't lash out, fight back, push back against the aggressors? And then what, you just end up dead or hurt or whatever. What do you do in this situation? What is the right move? It's almost impossible to know what to do at the end of the day. You know, it's just so fucked up that even that this shit even happens in the real world at all, too. Oh, my God. It's just so ignorant and so blinding. That's all this is. And this group, too, they feel like they're in control and they're powerful for standing up against these people encroaching upon their rights or whatever. And then they're just being puppeteered by someone who doesn't give two shits about what they are acting on and even are acting in opposition to their own ideals.
Where but have I heard of
them,
that before?
It's a good little scapegoat, and it gets them what they want. And they're just puppets to this other organization altogether, one they even claim to hate as well. He's working for Hydra. I think this episode did a really good job at showing how blinding fear can be and hate. All it does is infect and wound. It doesn't bring anything good. No, then we have Gemma going through this thing here, trying to, like, you know, reconcile with all the stuff that's happened over the last, you know, couple of episodes between losing Will, the stuff with Fitz and all this stuff, letting out Lash, and then the victims that fell because of that, putting that all on her shoulders, and then finding a way to work through that, trying not to be so helpless as she's out there practicing with this weapon. And then, you know, May brings her in on the hunt for Andrew, and she starts helping with that, trying to work through that. And I thought that was a lot of fun. The whole thing with Lincoln and Coulson was a lot of fun. We got Papa taking taking the boyfriend out for vetting, so to speak. Not just for that, because like you said, you're here for Daisy, but I need to know if you're here for the cause, because we all are, and I need to know that you can be too. You know, he, even though he got a bad evaluation, he was still willing to give him the benefit of the doubt. But this was overall such a fantastic episode. I loved seeing them kind of wrestle around with some of this stuff too and tackle some of this subject matter, especially given what's going on here and obviously what's going on in the world today too. Again, depressing as hell that this is probably even more relevant at this moment than it was when this came out. One would hope it would be less relevant today, but unfortunately that is not the case. That is a sad, sad reality of it. And I absolutely love that this episode, given what it was talking about here, especially with this hate group who wants to eradicate Inhumans and all that, and anything alien of the sort, was centered around Mac, who we know and had followed for a long time, who had a very similar fear for a long time after what happened with Trip, everything that was going on with the Contagion and with the Inhumans. You know, he had this huge, like, fear and apprehension of anything alien at all, especially once he got corrupted and taken over by something like that once, and how he feared it because he didn't understand it. But then over time, the more he was around it, the more he exposed himself, the more he got to know Daisy, the more he got to understand these people and talk with them, meet with them, he overcame that ignorance, that fear, and he could see them for who they are. They're just people with the same problems, with the same feelings, the same emotions. They might have different abilities. They might look different. At the end of the day, they're just living their lives just like us, and that's all they really want to do. And just like with us, there's bad humans and good humans. And just like them, there's bad inhumans and good inhumans. They're, at the end of the day, just as human as we are. They just have different abilities than we do at times. He started off, you know, being so fearful of this stuff, he didn't want Coulson anywhere near, you know, being in charge of S.H.I.E.L.D. or anything of the sort, that he didn't even want to be in a S.H.I.E.L.D. that would even work with Coulson because of that fear that he had. And we went from that all the way to this episode where we got someone like Daisy, who is an out and open inhuman, saying that she trusts no one more than Mac to have her back. You know, even when they don't see eye to eye, even when they disagree, no matter what, he's going to be looking out for her. It's a great example of what happens when you take the time to look past your fear, to grow, to take the opportunity to understand. And a lot of people aren't willing to do that. They're nice and comfortable in their ignorance. Fantastic episode. Fantastic episode.
I thought this was such a terrific episode. It was also a character-rich episode. And I got to say, I feel like through the process of this conversation, I was able to kind of like notice some things for the first time. And keeping the whole like arc of the show in my head, I was able to pinpoint, it's really curious. This may be something where something else starts, or it could lead to somewhere else. But as always, feel free to share your own thoughts about what you noticed of this episode. And then also, if you have anything to say about what we said, you can go ahead and also leave that down below. David, do you have anything else to offer before I collapse into oblivion?
Yeah, it was a good episode. Very, very relevant to today.
Right?
There are so many times I wanted to bring that up, but you know, I was just like, you know what? I'll wait till later. But
it's apparent.
Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty apparent. Yeah, but I didn't really need to be said. It's like, yeah, I mean, it's all very relevant to, especially some of the things that were happening in this week, right? That we're talking about this. Like, I thought it was pretty creepy how like even in this episode we have a character that had a neck injury.
Yeah,
even to that specificity, it's a
damn
it's very creepy, like the situation. And yeah, it's and that, by the way, to be clear about that, it's not to make light or to laugh at anyone's misery about, you know, tragic events that may have happened. It's us just like
it's just a crazy coincidence.
Trying to it's just so surreal. Mm-hmm. It's so surreal, right? Like all of this happening, and then of course it's being reflected, or maybe it was predicted about before it ever happened. It's just even to like how this episode opens up with like a terrorist attack, basically, and that it was very well organized and well funded. And let's just say how the way things are looking like right now was something that happened this week. It's like, this wasn't a lone wolf. This was organized in some one way or the other. So it's like ominous that this was the week that we watched this episode.
Yep.
Of all the weeks. So it's like, oh, okay. I was trying not to think about that when we were watching this episode, you know, but then it's like, well, I guess it wasn't just me that was like, huh. Yeah. Anywho, anything else?
I mean, just as relevant as it was, it's also like a pretty simple episode, just a whole Mac episode. I really like Mac.
Right.
definitely one of my favorite characters. So any chance we get to know more about him, that's always the best, especially, you know, other episodes later on where we get more about him. It's really, really cool.
Yeah. I do feel like beginning with like this episode, we're going to get not just more with this character, but I do feel we're going to get some more episodes that are focused on specific characters. I want to say coming up, we're going to have an episode that's mostly focused on Malik, which is pretty interesting. So it's like, okay, It's a really interesting change of pace with the structure of this back half of the season. I'm trying to think, like, with season 2, there really weren't that many episodes that were almost solely focused on an individual character. There were a few. I think of Melinda was one in season 2.
Mm-hmm.
But mostly it was all just like one ongoing continuous thing. Season 3, I think, takes some really interesting choices where it is serialized like every season of the show is. But there are certain episodes that are just like their own thing. I mean, with season 3, we've already had 4,722 hours. And then this episode, Watch Dogs, and then Parting Shot is its own thing too. It's like these are episodes that all move the story along, but are kind of their own thing and stand on their own for being what they are. So it's like season 3 is an interesting season because I think this is the show dipping their toes into like not being more episodic, but like I think flexing their creative muscles about what they can, how they can tell their story and maybe what characters to do more with than they otherwise would have in the past. So that's something to take note of.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
All right. Well, with all that being said, thank you everyone again for listening and tuning in, and we will see you back here next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.